Hey, thanks everyone for taking your seats. We can go ahead and get started with the public comment session. And I didn't mention this morning that today and tomorrow we're going to have two public comment sessions. We have one now and we have another one tomorrow morning. And we really want to limit the comments today to general comments on sector performance. If there's anything from, you know, the presentations this morning or along the lines of sector implementation in general, this is the best time for that. And then tomorrow morning, the public comment session, we're looking for comments specifically related to experiences of fishermen in sectors and your experience with the sector management. So with that said, we're going to keep it on a pretty tight timeline. So who would like to speak? Yeah, and just if you could say your, you don't have to, but to say your name for the record, anyone that wants to speak so I know who you are. Thanks. Anyone else?
I'm in favor of sectors. I enjoy them. I'm tired of throwing fish over.
Can you say your name for the record?
Oh,
thanks.
Dennis Robillard, fishing vessel duly into Sector 2. In favor of sectors, maybe with some tweaking, we all can enjoy them a little bit better. I like the idea that we had more access to areas that have been closed to us for years. It brings more opportunities to each of us. I would not like to see any reallocation of the fishery. I would like to see more access to some of the closed areas that we have now that are permanently closed, such as Gasher Sledge and Jeffrey Sledge. I think there's areas in there that we should be able to have some access to for some underutilized species, pollock being one of them, redfish being the other. I don't feel like an accumulation limit for vessels is a huge issue. I think that's going to take care of itself, especially the way the price of the permits have gone in the last year. There's not too many people that can afford them other than these permit banks that are popping up everywhere. And I'd like to see the 10-10-20 rule disappear as well. That'll give some of these other guys that want to go chase pollock, for example, if there's a bank haddock, an opportunity to go cruise out to get a smaller vessel. There's a lot of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, okay.
Allison Jordan, Fishing Vessel, Eastern Allison, Fishing Vessel, Jamie and Ashley, Portland, Maine. I believe that sectors are working. I believe that you have definitely begun trying to change things before you even know what's going on. I feel bad for people that don't have what they want. We all have the right in this country to access this natural resource. And to access it, if it takes money, you go to a bank. You don't go to a permit bank, you don't go to the state, you don't go to the government. We who have survived this actually have survived on our own. With no help from the U.S. government. We survived their rules, many of them, and it's time to stop. Let's stop and just look at how sectors are working. Give it 5 years, like you do with fish stocks. Give us a break.
Thanks. Anyone else that wants to speak? Going once. Ah, in the back.
My name is Frank Pisano. I own a few vessels of fish out of Boston. First year sector man and governor of nearly half into the second. I'm very happy with the results so far. First time in years, I feel like I have some control over this debate about business. Clear all up in the base, move back to the side of the man, where, how, you want to fish and also gain maximum benefit out of it. I know many stakeholders, including myself, certain chill species that make it a little more difficult. But overall, I found the age trading process painless, prices reasonable, much easier and more affordable than they can see these things. At this point, I'd like to see the industry return to stability by moving forward with the recycling system. By making some changes, we'll move on to yield. I think we'll see the industry flourish again. I think removing some or all of the groundfish mortality rates from closure will do just that. One problem I do see for sector management is the prohibitive cost of monitoring. I think we need to find a long-term solution for that. Recently, I've heard people talk about reallocating aids to certain communities and new entrants and get their share. I think that's ridiculous. Most of us have been suffering for years on the days at sea. And we finally got a plan in place that allotted aids for a 10-year time span for the people who have historically harvested it, and now we want to just give it away. No one fish holder has enough fish now. Who's going to decide who the minister needs to be? Another concern that I have is the discussion of controlling age trade by vessel class and size. Age trading is a key component of sector management, which should be kept as simple and affordable as possible. This was a major flaw in the data sea management system that drove data sea prices up in vessels and larger classes. We should continue to encourage age trading between vessels of all sizes for the mutual benefit of all. I want to reiterate that stability is very important at this time. As an industry, we are operating with an aging fleet, and if you expect stakeholders to invest in new vessels, we need stability in our regulatory system. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Rob Oblin. I'm from Portland, Maine, here. And I guess I don't like sectors. It did a lot better on the day of the sea. Smaller vessel with not a lot of allocation. So pretty much the polar opposite of that gentleman just spoke. Did okay in the first year of sectors because I was in the common pool and we were allowed a lot more fish. This year I elected to go into a sector because the uncertainty of getting the agency in the common pool was great, so I went ahead and joined a sector. Last trip I paid 38% off the gross, or lease fish. And I'm sure sectors are fine, they're working good for guys with allocation, with catch history. But if I'm not correct, from most of the data I've heard from nymphs and scientists that we're turning the corner, we're rebounded, not many species are overfished, we've just about done a good job, and I think what's done a good job is days at sea. It was painful, we threw back a lot of fish, it wasn't an ideal situation, but we brought the stocks back by getting cut. Now it's time to reap the benefit. But unfortunately, if you don't have a high enough ace, you're going to go out of business. And I don't have a high enough ace. I'm paying $1 a pound for Delphamine cod. That turns into $1.17 a pound landed weight. And if we get $2 a pound, which is a pretty good price for cod, but not when you already paid $1.17 for it. White hake, which has been in high abundance this year, 74 cents a pound before I make a penny. That's what I'm into the white hake for. I don't mean to be doom and gloom and rain on the parade here. I think most of this room is in favor of catch shares and it's working for some people, but I do feel it's important to see the other side of the spectrum. There are guys going out of business. Sector managers have gotten great jobs. but at the cost of several fishing families that are going out of business. The way the allocation was divvied up, 100% cash history, I believe, was extremely unfair. It should have been factored in the size of the vessel and the days at sea that were allocated, not just 100% cash history. So if we're going to adjust anything down the road, maybe we can try to dole out the fish a little more effectively. But it's definitely not a cheerful situation for myself and a bunch of other guys. That's it.
Thank you. Oh. Chris?
Tony Bramante, Boston. American Pride, the Fishing Vessel America, two goals today on. I'd like to stand up here and just keep saying the word stability. That's what makes this industry, is going to make the industry hold together. I don't see that just yet. I see a lot of instability, which brings up a couple of points that I'd like to bring up. Talking about the restricted age trades based on baselines, I'm hearing a lot of talk about that. And I'd like to make a couple of comments and maybe make people realize that where we're at. I adjusted my business based on catch years and recently sold two out of the four boats that I'd owned for 15 plus years, knowing that I had the flexibility of being able to put all of my ace, which was 8 permits, on the newer and safer boats that I had owned, and be able to cut expenses to survive in this industry. Now we talk about restricting again, which means my small permits that I own won't fit on my bigger boats. Am I now back in the market to buy another boat to fit those permits again after I just sold 2 perfectly good boats? When does it end? When does it stop? Second point I'd like to briefly talk is about allocation. Here's some mumbling about reallocation again. If that comes up, that's all we're doing is we have new winners and new losers. That's all that will come out of that. A shuffle of the deck and a deal of a new hand. Where is it going to go? Where is it going to get us? Let's leave it alone. And finally, the third subject is about the closed areas. I think that they need to get reopened. Some, if not all of them, need to be opened. That system was in place for an input system, not an output system. I'd like to keep saying the word stability. And that's what I'd like to see this about. Thanks.
Thank you. Did I see some over here before? Or? No, yes, I thought so.
Hi, Angelo Sioka from Nova Seafood here in Portland. I sympathize with Robbie, the hard times he's going through, and some of the other folks that are like him, that whether they have not caught fish during the periods of years that the allocation was set on, and invest in the business like Tori did and others did. But the only way I see that Robbie becomes whole again is when, I like to say when, not if, when National Marine Fisheries Service makes it so that we can catch the allocation again. No one's really questioning on that. If the if we were catching the ace this year, Robbie would not be paying what he's paying for temporary fish. The price for temporary would be down drastically, as would fish be at the wharf and at the retail store. And besides that, the U.S. consumer here in the Northeast would be eating some really local caught fish rather than imported Chinese and other products, which is what most of you are eating when you go to your restaurants, just so you know. Because 86% of all seafood consumed in the United States today is imported. Being shoreside, We're being hurt tremendously right now. The haddock quotas are being cut, which makes for lower landings of haddock, and that's what kept a big chunk of the processors here in Massachusetts, Maine, New Hampshire, alive over the last few years. And that was primarily Canadian haddock, because the Canadian government has figured out a way for their harvesters to catch basically 100% of their allocation. Whereas in the United States, I think year to date, we're under 10% on our haddock catch, both east and west Georgias. So again, you know, closed areas like everybody else has just mentioned are a huge factor. And I would ask the council to pressure National Marine Fisheries Service and ask National Marine Fisheries Service to get off their hands and get those closed areas open, because the closed areas happen to be where the fish like to congregate, like to hang out. And I'm not talking about catching spawners, okay? They just should be spawning closures. But nonetheless, the rest of the year, a lot of pollock, a lot of cod, a lot of hake are in those closed areas and haddock. And we're not allowed access to them. And that, those areas were closed years ago to help protect the fish. But now we're told by science, National Marine Fisheries Science, that the fish, many of the stocks have come back nicely. And we're given a very nice science-based allocation, but National Marine Fisheries Service is not allowing us to catch that fish. So, I think that's the major, major issue at this point in time. If we're being allocated a resource, but not having regulations that allow us to catch it, everybody in this room should be asking why. Because I think everybody in this room, wants the fishermen to stay alive here in New England. And the only way we're going to do that is by catching the allocated fish. The second thing that's really important as far as harvesters and shore side is the science that we're getting out of nymphs that from year to year can go 180 degrees. I mean, that's a very difficult way for anybody to make an investment in the future. So I asked National Marine Fisheries Service Science to get with the program and get us some good science and not make drastic about faces like we've seen on the yellowtails, and now I understand the Delta Maine cod. I mean, how is an industry supposed to plan for the future when our science seemingly doesn't really know what the heck is out there? I mean, they're paid, to give us good science, and I think the American people should expect good science from the Science Center. So all the scientists out there, I think we need to do a better job. That being said, sectors, we have days at sea. Days at sea, we're not working. With the days at sea program, I understand that nobody can fish in too many days starting last year, which is the reason we went to the sectors.
So
now
I can't
we
run
leave
webinar.
The sectors alone for a little while. And Allison said, give it 5 years, see how it plays out, and I think everybody will be happy in the end at how it plays out. And for guys like Robbie, like I said, if we catch more fish, price of temporary fish and permanent fish will drop, and guys like Robbie will stand a chance to make a living again. Thank you.
Thank you. We've got one back here.
Hello, my name is David Ogier. I'm from Bremen, Maine, and I'm a member of the sustainable harvest sector. And I have 5 medium-sized vessels operating within that sector. And 8 permits, and it's working out well for me because I can pull my ace and move it around to the boats, depending on the captain and what he likes to catch. And I have some choke species. It's very easy working with the sector manager to get to trade or buy ace and keep the boats moving. Last year I had one of my better years of total gross after getting out of the days at sea, because it was the days were going down, and the daily trip catches on the species was killing us. So I think it's working out well, and I think we ought to leave it alone and let it run its course. So I think it's doing a good job for me anyway. Thank you.
Thank you. We have time for maybe one or two more comments.
My name is Marcus Alexander, owner and operator of the fishing vessel DMA. I've been fishing in excess of 40 years in Palm Beach. We started out days at sea. I fished alongside a foreign fleet before the Court of Ireland. But I think we're restricted more now than I was back then. Days at sea, we was hitting no place. Just cut. The problem with the downfish industry, which I'm quite sure all managers know by now, is when one person could dig up any type of slip to land one cutfish, he got a permit. And the industry never had all them boats to begin with. And people sold them, they got big money for them, they walked away, put more horsepower aboard smaller boats to go lobstering, and they now they want back into some fisheries, or they, you know. But those of us that have been in it all these years have given, 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 and tried to bring the stock back. Those of us that are still in it, believe it or not, care about the stock, we care about the fisheries in the Northeast, always have. Other than that, I've sold, I'm old enough to retire and then some. But I care about the fisheries. I don't want to walk away from it this time. I believe in management. I do have a problem with the closed areas. There were big chunks of property in the ocean that were just drawn straight lines on. It had nothing to do with bringing the stocks back. They were just easy lines for supposed to be the Coast Guard to chase. And I think we need to straighten them out. We need to do what we need to do to protect the juvenile fish on top of these banks. But we do not need the great big chunks of ocean that they've just cut off and become areas for certain people to use. And it's hurting our stock for people that I use. You know, if we got a problem in an area, we all sacrifice a little bit, not just a few of us. So I think, and I think some of the rolling closures could be open. I've got allocation like you wouldn't believe on dabs. Yet we can't get to any of the places where they are now. Yeah. What good does it do me? Yeah. I'm not against, I'm not up to, you know, opening the spawning areas when they're there at certain times. But, you know, we all have technology, believe it or not. You can chase us. I mean, I got a collar on me worse than any prisoner ever had on my boat. They know where I am every second. Yeah? There's no such thing as not knowing where we are. I'll tell you right now. But some of the rolling closures could be open to help some of the boats on the inside. I don't own a big vessel. I own a 54-foot stern collar. She is a very seaworthy vessel, but still, I think there's ways that we can do some things to let the people in. As far as sectors goes, I belong to one. I bought a boat. I bought another permit, invested in it when everybody else was bailing out. And it was days at sea. I bought it for days at sea. It doesn't give me much as far as allocation goes, but it does give me a few of the choke allocations, like flybacks and yellowtails, which we never caught here in Maine. They're right up on your beaches. You don't fish on the beaches here in Maine. It's the main lobster crabs you can't even think about. But that stock is growing and it's moving on. And it does choke us. So I think the choke species, yes, something needs to be looked at like that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. One more comment? Chris, do you have one? No, go for it.
Hi, Steve Welch. Sector 10 in the South Shore. I've made business plans based on the last few years, knowing that it was coming down in the sectors. I was fortunate because I had a bigger boat. I was able to go out and access some stocks that the other people in my community weren't able to. I think we can make sectors work, but we have to talk about the serious issues, and one of them is the allocation. The guys that were small boats that were geographically isolated were not able to access the stocks and create history. Most of the people that speak, and I'm not attacking them because I'm probably one of them, they have quite a bit of allocation. We have to, I think it's our responsibility to help the smaller boats out, the guys that actually sacrifice, waiting for the day to come where they can go and start fishing once again profitably. That's been taken away from them. So what we have to do is have a serious discussion about allocation. This is a quota system. Everywhere around the world, we have a quota system. The allocation is the first issue that should be discussed. And I think we should at some point talk about the allocation, what we can do for the guys that are less fortunate than all the winners here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And don't forget, we have another public comment session tomorrow morning, so if you wanted to get a chance to say something and didn't yet, we'll have another chance. So if I can ask the panel members for the first panel on visioning for sectors to come up. Hopefully you know who you are. we're missing Steve Welch, too, on this panel. Yes. And Linda McCann. Okay, this is our first panel. It's on long-term visioning for sectors, and unfortunately the name got shortened into just visioning, and I know it's created some confusion, so I just wanted to clarify that the purpose of this panel is to talk about what the council's sort of long-term vision for sector management might be down the road. If the sector system was functioning perfectly, what would that look like? What are the goals and the hopes for the sector system looking down the road? So the way that the panels are going to work is we've got about an hour and a half for this one. So what I'm hoping is that we can spend about a third of the time, maybe a little less for this one, talking about issues with the topic area. I know visioning is a little bit of a strange one to talk about issues and possible solutions for those issues for the next third. And then for the last part of the panels, we're going to take audience questions for the panel members. And I'm not planning on going down the row and asking everyone what they think. I think it'll probably be more effective to let someone start and then let everyone else chime in. But I will make sure that everyone gets a chance to speak. So I'll ask that you just, you know, pay attention. And please remember there's 9 or 10 people on the panel and relatively limited time. So try to be as concise as you can. So I'll introduce the panel members for this first panel. It's a little hard for me to see them, so I'm just going to read off my list. We've got Libby Etree, who is representing the Northeast Seafood Coalition Sector 3 in place of Nick Brancaleone. Eric Brazier from the Fixed Gear Sector. Frank Patania, who's a fisherman from the Sustainable Harvest Sector. Tricia DeGraff from the Maine Permit Bank. Yeah, sorry, down there. Mike Walsh, who's a fisherman in Sector 6. Steve Welch, who fishes in Sector 10. Linda McCann, who's the manager of Sectors 7 and 8. Josh Wiersma, who manages Sectors 11 and 12. These are the Seafood Coalition sectors. And Aaron Doherty, who's the manager, the manager of the Northeast Coastal Communities sector. So I actually am going to ask Libby Etree to kick. Oh, yes? Oh. Can you put your mic on and say his name again so we have it? Thanks.
Jamie Hayward, also. I'd want to introduce him, also. He's a fisherman in Sector 11 and 12.
Great, thanks.
Yep.
So I'm going to let Libby get started here because I know she's prepared a little something, or she's laughing, somewhat prepared a little something. And then we'll move on to other people to add to it or take it from there.
So just to really, again, quickly clarify, I'm sitting here on behalf of Nick Brancaleone and Northeast Fishery Sector 3, which are the Gloucester Fixed Gear sector. Nick is unable to attend this meeting since he's actually on vacation. So I agreed to sit in and, as much as possible, answer questions for Sector 3 in their absence. We had a conversation, some of the people on the panel, and also, as captured in Sector 3's letter, answering some of the questions the council had put forth. One of the biggest things that the sector is highlighting is the need for a certain level of stability. They're trying to develop business models and strategically think about how they can make the most of what is available to them. And they feel as if they don't have a level of stability, they're just going to develop business models and see them change dramatically in the future. And to be honest, I think that they're sick of seeing things change dramatically in this fishery. I think also we were talking about when you look at the sector system, We're a year and a half in, but I think it's safe to say that this transition is not over. There are a lot of corrections, fixes, modifications, clarifications that are going to be needed. And I think, well, I don't think Sector 3 has expressed their vision that people will realize it's a constantly evolving process and that we need to pay attention to what's going on and make the modifications in their business models and with what they view as some of the most pressing items that are going to hinder their vision for their sector and their community are things such as monitoring, the cost of monitoring, how they're going to be able to afford it. For the upcoming fishing year, at-sea monitoring will be covered, but dockside monitoring and at-sea monitoring are still looming around the corner for 2013. I'm confused on the years now. So I think one of the other things with their vision is acknowledging that the sector system is costly, acknowledging that things such as monitoring are costs that they cannot afford at this point in time, and also acknowledging that some of the requirements being placed on their sectors ultimately ends up adding a cost because either it's redundant or their manager is tasked with doing a lot of things that they feel there are more appropriate individuals to handle. Let's see what else. So those are just the short things to lead off the discussion. I think a lot of these items are going to be delved into more deeply in some of the other panels. So, and one final note in looking towards their vision and what they would like to see, obviously it's highlighted in their letter, their existing effort controls that hamper their ability to fully utilize what's available to them. So any ability to remove those effort controls, such as the rolling closures or closed areas, are going to further enable them to really come up with a strategic plan to try to make the system work for them.
So if anyone else on the panel wants to jump in, if they have anything to add to that, if not, I can call on you.
I don't think we'll work. The light's not working. We've been going through 20 years of conservation. There's been a lot of boats have paid their dues as far as conservation. You know, they've worked to bring back stocks. You know, I think now it's time we come into a sector. We started working under the sector thing. It's given you a little bit more opportunity to move around a little more. Put us on a hard tack fisheries. It was at a severe cost to the industry. But you know what? What's in the past is in the past. I'd like to move on. And I'm one of the guys that took the severe cost. I did it through a bank, nobody else. You know, I basically did everything I had to do myself. You know, I downgraded my steel like the council and no one wanted. I'm down to two boats. I did have four boats. You know, there's quite a few permits behind the four boats that I had bought and paid for. You know, I'd like to have stability. I'd like to be able to, as a businessman, make a long-term business plan and not worry about what's going to happen next year. This is, it's getting a little ridiculous to not know what your future is. And I'd really like to, I'd really like the council to consider the business part of this. You know, we need a long-term business plan. I can't be going to the bank and saying, hey, guess what? I fooled you last year. My boat's actually worth a lot less than I said it was, or a lot less than it was surveyed for because I sold it for a lot less. I can't do that next year again, because I got plenty invested in the business. I'd like to keep it going. It is a small business. You know, this is the future of fisheries. We're on a hard tack. Everything's on the rebound. Everything's on the rebuild. You know, I just need stability to be able to say in my mindset, my crew, everybody to say, this is what we're doing. We're going ahead in the future. Thank you.
Anyone else wants to jump in there?
Basically, my thoughts are Mayor and Mike's. We need to move on and know that we can keep on going out there so we can earn a living and, you know, I had mentioned when I spoke earlier in the public comments that, you know, a lot of us have older boats, and the only way we're going to be able to do that is to know that we're going to continue on with the sector system. And not that it doesn't need improvement. I think we'll all agree that there's improvements to be made, because a lot of us didn't even come close to harvesting the optimum yield for our particular permit. So if we, you know, open up some of those closed areas that kind of holding us back on, especially on like George's Bank Haddock, I think you'll see some big improvements there, and I think you'll see the sector system put a lot more money into the industry, and we can actually get on to, you know, making a better industry out of it. So I guess that's basically all I have to say. Thank you.
So I just wanted to talk about a couple trends. I think it's great that we're moving in the direction of more flexibility for fishermen, and we've eliminated regulatory discards for the most part, and we're definitely making some good improvements. I think that people around the country and probably around the world are looking to the New England ground fish management system as something that's innovative, and they want to see how this plays out, how it works for the fishermen that are currently fishing now, how it works for the communities overall in this region. It's definitely an iconic fishery, and I think it's captured a lot of people's attention. So I just wanted to mention a few numbers that stood out for me. This is based on the report that the Science Center did that came out recently. One of their updates, I think it's not the most recent update, but it's the one just before that. As far as active vessels and number of boats that landed groundfish for all of New England over the percent change over the past 3 years from 2010 to the prior 3 years, we're down about 26%. It shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. We know that, you know, the fleet is definitely changing. A couple other numbers to highlight. Revenue by home port, for example, 2010 compared to the average of the prior 3 years is down 46, almost 47%. And then two other numbers, revenue by vessel size. For boats that are 30 feet to 50 feet, they're down 12.5% between 2010 and the prior 3 years. And then 75 feet and above are up 41% compared to the prior 3 years. So the reason I mention that is just because I think it's an important trend to keep an eye on. We know from experience with other catch share systems around the country and around the world that, you know, consolidation does happen. It's to be expected. And the question is, how is that consolidation going to happen, and can we direct it? Do we have any control over the direction that that's going to take? I think a lot of people are concerned about what's happening in outlying ports. I work with fishermen from eastern Maine and have to say they're definitely concerned about basically not having a ground fishery anymore and wondering whether there's a possibility of it existing there in the future. I also have sector members on the other end of New England right now down in Martha's Vineyard, and they share the same thing. So there's sort of, you know, bookends on the New England region, but there's a lot of small ports that are wondering what's the future for their communities in this fishery. So I mentioned that, and I think that, you know, Amendment 18 that the council is taking up now is a good opportunity to take a look at how this fishery, how we can continue to shape it. And I think we've heard comments, you know, from people saying we need stability, and also comments from people saying the system's not working for me. And so we've got to take a look at, you know, what we've done right now. And up to this point, we're really, you know, as a management community, I think that the region has reacted to, you know, the Magnuson-Stevens Act and mandates that have required us to go to hard catch limits and accountability measures. And those were pretty strict mandates. You know, we had to do it. We had things that we had to meet. We had goals we had to meet. But now we've got a little bit more flexibility. We can sort of step back and take a look at what's working in the system now and what's not working. Who's it working for? Who is it not working for? And take a hard look at that, see what the facts are, and start to think about where we want to go. So anyway, I think this Amendment 18 is a good opportunity, and I definitely want to see the council and the region as a whole take full advantage of it and weigh in and hopefully and think about some of the answers to those difficult questions. Thanks.
And I'm going to call on Eric, because I know you were the one that initially brought this up as a topic that you thought was very important to talk about at this workshop. So if you want to.
Thank you, Annie, for putting me on the spot. this is a concern that I've heard on the Cape quite a bit. It's kind of a lack of vision, a lack of a direction. You know, we know which way we're heading, but we don't know when we'll get there. We don't know what there looks like. It's pretty hard, you know, for a fisherman to put together a business plan if they don't know where they want to be in a year or 2 years or 5 years. So after speaking to a few fishermen on the Cape, there seemed to be this, you know, this resounding interest in getting an idea of where we want to be in a few years, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. You know, so much time is spent responding and reacting. It doesn't leave a whole lot of time to sit down and make proactive decisions. And, you know, to kind of put things into perspective, the hook sector, you know, was developed in 2004. That's almost a decade ago now. And, you know, they, in their development, they came up with a list of goals. And they essentially said, you know, we want to live within sustainable limits, but we want the flexibility and the efficiency to do it in a way that we can maintain some profitability for our businesses, that we don't get run out of business, yet we're staying within the limits prescribed by the law. And I don't see much of that changing. I mean, a lot of that's very similar to what we're seeing today. Stability is a resounding theme we've heard so far this morning, and we're going to hear it this afternoon and throughout tomorrow. You know, my fishermen tell me that I need to be able to make a business plan. I need to be able to go to the bank and tell them what my vision is and what my plan is for the next few years. I need to become more efficient. You know, the days at sea system seem to be pretty inefficient. And moving to a system like this, you're allowing fishermen's businesses to become more efficient. And what that does is it allows you to increase profitability, and it allows you to reduce redundancy. You know, we see that from a fisherman's business angle, and we also see it from a sector management and a sector ops angle. I don't think there's a sector manager out there that believes that we can't become more efficient. We can't reduce a lot of the redundancies that we're seeing these days. Flexibility is a key goal. You know, allowing fishermen to make business decisions within the limits of the laws and allowing them to figure out how to meet these goals and them to figure out how to come up with their business plans. At the same time, you know, giving the sector fishermen and the sectors themselves more control, more autonomy, and allowing them to make decisions in real time, which, as we're going through this transitioning period, things are getting better, but we're still making decisions based on information that's months, if not years, old. And these fishermen need to make business decisions on a daily basis, and right now we can't make that without an improved system. So that's kind of the reason why I mentioned this to Annie and others, because I'd like the opportunity to work with my fishermen on the Cape to come up with some proactive plans and figure out how we're going to get to where we need to get without having to continually respond and tweak and react to all these fires. You know, it's crisis control, and that's not the way to run a business.
Thanks, Eric. Do any of the other sector managers, the fishermen, want to talk any more about concerns about how visioning has affected your sector? Any other thoughts? I've heard a lot about stability. Josh, you look ready to go.
Sure. So, again, my name's Josh Wiersma. I think there's a couple of points, you know, that I'd like to bring up. And, you know, all of these panels kind of overlap one another. I think this visioning encompasses, you know, a lot of what you'll hear in the monitoring panel and the ACE trading panel and, you know, data management and reconciliation. There's a few things, though, that I'd like to point out here that that I brought up in my letter to the council. I think, you know, let me just start out. The most immediate concern I think that all sectors have right now is this pressing cost of the at-sea monitoring program. You know, certainly that was great news that it's set to be funded for next year. But you would think that the fishermen would be more pleased than what they are. But I think what they realize is that you're kind of just putting a Band-Aid on a floodgate right now, where this is still hanging over our heads for 2013 with no vision of how we're going to actually pay for this again. So it's, you know, a level of anxiety that really isn't going to go away, and we're just going to be left in the same position a year from now discussing, oh man, where are we going to get the money to pay $600 a day for an ATSI monitor, which is what the estimates are that we've all been hearing. And certainly for sectors like ours, which are relatively small in scope and in landings, it's a dramatic inequity where the per price per pound, that we would end up paying for this program is infeasible. It would actually increase our operating costs threefold. I did a survey of my own members when I thought that we would have to fund this program ourselves this year, and 85% of my members said that if they had to pay this cost themselves at what the required level was, which was, I believe, 17% of all monitoring trips, that they would decide to either lease their entire allocation or try to sell their permits, which would effectively cripple and really destroy our two sectors for regulatory costs. It just, it kind of boggles my mind how, you know, this can be, you know, such a constraint on the industry when, you know, sectors can't operate efficiently if left to their own accord for the most part. If we can have a united vision on what we're going to see for a ATSI monitoring program moving forward, I know that my sector, along with the other Northeast fisheries sectors and the other sectors actually in New England, proposed one method of allowing us to use the fixed discard rate moving forward. Now we'll have 3 years' worth of data before we actually have to decide on having observers on the vessels, which is more than sufficient amount of information to describe the behavior of fishermen at sea while they're fishing and to have certainty in the level of discards that they're actually throwing overboard. An interesting analysis that I was able to do in my sector this year was to show that if we randomly eliminate one half of all of the observed trips, that it would have no statistical impact on the assumed discard rate for our sector, meaning we would have the exact same statistically assumed discard rate with one half of the actual observer coverage. And so you're left to wonder then, well, what is the actual point in having all of this extra observer coverage, especially if the burden is going to be placed on industry shoulders? So I think I've said enough on that topic right now, but I just want to mention two other things, and then I'll hopefully open it up to a little more discussion. I really would like to see an increase in the level of rollover of fish from 1 year to the next. The current system allows us to roll over 10% of our fish, which quite frankly doesn't make sense to me. We're fishing under a hard tack, and effectively what you've done is you've given sectors a property right to this resource, which in that sense is no different than managing a grove of trees or a forest, where a manager would choose to harvest the level of trees each year where the biomass equals the discount rate. It's kind of the same in fishing. If a fisherman chose to allow the biomass to grow at a rate where they believed they could gain more money the next year or more easily catch fish, that they should have the right to do that. Also, they should also be able to plan their fishing business more effectively from year one to year two. dramatic repercussion of this 10% rollover was that fishermen were forced at the end of the year to fire sale their fish. So you saw ace prices reduced by 80 to 90% in some cases because they were afraid they were going to lose it. If they were guaranteed that they'd be able to roll over more fish, you'd also see the ace prices stabilize from year one to year two. And also, there's opportunities for fishermen with a low allocation in year one to plan to fish in year two if they choose to save their allocation in year one. But the marginal benefit of an increase in a higher rollover for year two is enough to allow them to then be active in year two, then you would see a larger number of vessels fishing from year one to year two. So there's many benefits, in my opinion, that would result of increasing this rollover. And I have some more points on different subjects, but I think I'll turn it over to somebody else at this point if they'd like to speak.
Thanks, Josh. Do either of you guys at the end have anything to add?
We'll get Jamie off the hook. You know, everyone's sacrificed so much to get here now that and it, you know, the point of stability, you know, it's the theme of this, is in the future. And I think it's really going to come down to having really real-time stock assessments, you know. And we have to work towards that goal on top of the problems we have right now, but in the long term, in the vision, you know, we need real-time data, and I just don't see that happening right now the way things are. And, you know, time is of the essence for small boats in the future. So, you know, and the vision is good, but, you know, hopefully sometime during this we'll flesh out the immediate concerns also.
Jamie, did you want to add anything too while we're down there?
Well, what I'd like to add is that we keep overlooking the fact that the fish come and they go. And we keep changing the rules based on what we see in 1 year. But there's so much more to it, you know. Everything continues to change all the time, and it's tough to build a business around that. But I mean, overreacting to certain situations and creating volatility isn't really the way to go. I mean, there's certain things that we can do to level off the playing field. And maybe they need to be done, but really overreacting isn't the right thing to do. So I don't know. To see where the fishery would go in a few years it's kind of tough. I mean, I'd like to see the smaller community survive. I'd like to see the bigger boats do what they need to do. You know, I'd like to see the jobs stay, larger jobs, smaller jobs. And there is a way to do it. And it's not really getting away from catch shares, because catch shares is the way to go. But whether it be allocation or whether it be area closures, I mean, there's a couple little things we can do to tweak the system to make it profitable for, you know, maybe not everybody, but we can make it fairer for the people that are still involved.
How about Linda? Do you have anything you want to add or did it cover? No? Okay. She feels good. All right. That's okay. We can switch gears a little bit. I wanted to ask Tricia, how, as the main permit bank manager, how you see permit banks fitting into the visioning for sectors and if there have been any concerns with that.
Yeah. Essentially, Maine has been we've got an effort on foot right now to take a pilot permit bank program that we've developed over the last year, to take and push that to a full-fledged program in the coming year. The aim of the program is to really keep some diversity in the industry by helping out smaller scale fishermen working in rural areas of the state, to try to assist them by providing them with some low-cost quota to complement their own portfolio of quota so they can fully utilize everything that they have on the permits, and to also give them a leg up during this transition. There are some things that could definitely help the permit bank program fully reach a full, fully-fledged program status. Some of those efforts or some of those things would be, you know, to allow us to amend our MOA, but I'm currently here because I'm a sector manager, and in the current regulatory system, the only way for us to help fishermen out and to trade or actually give ACE or quota to fishermen and help these guys out is to either be in a sector or what we did is formed our own sector. And essentially, I feel like being part of the sector manager's community here, I can definitely appreciate what they've had to go through, at least over the last year and a half. I've only been involved for the last year. I can appreciate it, but I have not had to undertake the data reconciliation process, the amount of work. I have not had to undertake that, but essentially what I'm trying to say is that we are a square trying to fit in a spot where a circle should be, and really the main permit bank sector is just the operational arm of the program, and what would help us out is if Amendment 17 could get passed and formally recognize us. It would definitely help us operate more efficiently and be able to help our fishermen out in the state a lot better. But in terms of long term, we're getting there. We've had 1 year where we've been able to help fishermen out, but definitely being able to see Amendment 17 through and also amend our MOA would allow us to fully utilize all the ACE in our permit bank, because there was a lot of fish left on the table. So we're looking forward to transitioning to being fully operational, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks. Is there anyone else on the panel that wants to talk about permit banks, maybe? Aaron?
No, not permit banks, but I have another comment I want to throw in.
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to mention, going back to my comment about Amendment 18, which is the accumulation caps and fleet diversity protections discussion in the groundfish FMP, and I think the council has just started or will be starting the scoping process for that. One of the points that was brought up sort of, you know, just before that ended up going out the door was whether we should think about inshore boats and offshore boats differently. And I haven't really heard that discussion since then. I don't think it's been brought up today. But I think that's something that we should consider in thinking about fleet vision as well. I mean, obviously, fleet diversity includes just that, diversity of vessel size classes. It's not, you know, one at the expense of the other in either direction. But the needs of inshore boats versus offshore boats, or big boats versus small boats, or whatever division you want, is not necessarily the same. So anyway, I just mentioned that because I think it's an issue that should be brought up and should be considered as well when we're talking about visioning. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. So we've heard, I think, a lot of concerns about visioning and some ideas from some of the panelists about what would need to change or, you know, to make a more unified vision for sectors. Are there any questions from the audience for the panel members? I don't know where my mics went.
As part of the overall vision for sectors, do you envision sector management evolving to the point where we would actually have ITQ management, or do you feel that the vision, the future of sectors is indeed sectors and nothing else? I appreciate your views on that, since the council consistently talks about going in that direction for some fisheries, perhaps ground fish. But as a council member, I'm still not sure how sectors themselves, the leadership of sectors, the membership of sectors, feel about the existing situation and whether or not they would want to free themselves from dependency on other fishermen within sectors so that they can go it alone as individual transferable quota fishermen. So, what's your vision again on that?
Well, you know, as a small business owner, I think nobody really likes to be tied in with somebody else, like to make your own personal decision. So personally, I think I'd rather manage my own quota the way I want to do it rather than, especially when you have this joint and several liability built into most of the sector contracts. And so personally, I would prefer an ITQ or down the road. So long term, I'd rather not see sectors be the end all of fishery regulation. Long term, I would prefer personally to have ITQs, and then I'm free of everybody, and they can run my business the way I see fit.
Any other responses from the panel? Dr. Pierce's question? Yeah.
I think right now ITQs is a little bit early to think about. I think there's a lot of things got to be done. I mean, right now we're at the point where we just want to make business plans, and you know, in my book, you know, I'd like to work a few years, and really not sell off assets every 3 years to stay in business, because that's what I feel like I've been doing. You know, I'd like to build a future, and I'd actually like to, if it went to ITQs, I'd like to have a positive say in it and a lot of input on it, and I think industry has to have a lot of input on it to go to ITQs. I just think right now is a little bit early for that. And, I mean, right now we're fishing under hard tax. There's no reason for closed areas. I think we got to figure out how to just work for now and go ahead in the future.
Let me give you an example of what I think a sector is. Going into my second year as sector manager, it's very similar to a sports team. And it's actually played out like that, where sector members, although they're held jointly and severally liable with one another, I've started to appreciate the fact that they're in this together. And some actual real-world examples of what I mean by this is that when a sector member comes to me and says, Josh, I'd like you to sell some of my fish for me, I'm like, all right, you know, we can either, you know, try to look inside the sector or look outside the sector. But I got to tell you, though, you know, we're a small sector. We might not be able to pay as much for your fish inside the sector. I said, no, that's okay. You know, I want to keep my fish inside the sector. You know, I want to help out, you know, my fellow sector member as much as I can. And in many instances, they've sacrificed money in order to keep their fish within the sector. And sectors effectively are operating as an ITQ in a sense that what members bring in, they get out. The benefit is that there's a pooling effect going on there too, and this comes into play especially with the choke stocks, where fishermen who have been allocated a very low amount of choke stocks aren't necessarily worried too much that they're going to go over that, because they know that, well, you know what, I know Joe has blackbacks, so if I exceed my blackbacks, I can just get some from Joe. He's already told me that I could. And it's those examples that I see play out every single day within the sector community. So, you know, I'd have to have a really good argument on what would be an advantage over an ITQ that you're not already seeing within the sector world for me to personally, you know, favor that. And it has nothing to do with me keeping my sector management job, by the way.
Whether we're talking about sectors or ITQs or IFQs or CQEs or any other form of output control, you know, I really think you still need a stable system that's not redundant. You know, we're both sector managers and fishermen right now are working under an incredibly redundant system, whether it's fisherman reporting or sector manager reporting or data reconciliation. You know, there's an incredible amount of redundancy. We're not able to make real-time decisions that are going to maximize the success of any output system. So I think, you know, in the interest of creating a stable and active management plan, you know, that should be first and foremost. We should focus on being able to make those decisions in real time and reducing a lot of the burden to the industry and the managers.
I think all the sector managers have had similar experience that Josh mentioned, where there is a group cohesiveness, or whatever you want to call it. There's a sense of members working together and members being willing to sacrifice a little bit, whether it's you know, some money for leasing or whatever, to keep the ace within the sector. And I think that's a good thing. I also think that we could learn from some of the ITQ systems and from some of the experiences in ITQ fisheries, both domestically and internationally, because some of them have worked really well, some of them have worked terribly, and this is a quota managed system as well, and we can definitely learn from that. I think that we should avoid, I'll just say I've heard the argument before that we can't do certain things because we're not an ITQ, we can't have accumulation limits because we're not an ITQ, or we can't do this or whatever, which I feel like is not a real valid argument, because people have pointed out that in a lot of ways sectors is operating like an ITQ right now. So I think we should sort of open up our perspectives a little bit and see what we can learn from other systems.
Thanks. I think we could take another question from the audience. There's one back there. No. Okay, go ahead. Sorry. And then we'll go over here.
You talk about stability, and I understand that. I appreciate that. My question has to do with what... Well, let me give you a little more background. I mean, the assessments are anything but stable. Right? There's rumors out there, and I don't know what happened with Gulf of Maine power assessment, but there's rumors that there's a large reduction in cod versus bank. I'm sorry, Gulf of Maine cod. So the idea is that that the assessment is done with uncertainty, and then there's also the notion of risk. In particular, what percentage or what probability rather of overfishing to apply to these assessments. This is sort of technical talk, but I'm on the SSC and we sort of struggle with this. So my question is generally, what level of risk would you accept, or what level of risk would you want when you're told, for example, that there was the stock assessments are done with uncertainty, the science leaves a lot to be desired. And I know it's sort of a technical question, but I'm interested in that. I think it's a simple question.
I don't know about risk. I mean, I got no control over the stock assessments. You need real-time science. You need up-to-date. I mean, we got to get them doing a better job. It's not me doing a better job. I've done everything I was supposed to do to get to the point I'm at, and I still keep getting hurt. And I'm sick of getting hurt about it. That's not on me. That's on the Science Center. That's on National Marine Fisheries to make sure they do the right kind of stock assessments. So if all of a sudden there's a problem with the Gulf of Maine cod, whose fault is that? That's the fishermen. The fishermen, we're on a hot tack. We only done what we were told. That's it. I mean, I think the stock assessment, you need better science. And I think that's the science. And I think you should be directing that to them, telling them to get on the ball. I think we've already been on the ball. I think we suffered enough. I think we've done enough. You know, I want a future. I'm sick of it. I don't have control of the Science Center. That's something that Noah's got to get control of, not us. And the risk, I can't help that risk. I mean, am I willing to take? I've been in it 2 feet, 5 generations, so I got a huge risk already in the business.
Any other responses from the panel?
you know, a couple of years ago, we were really concerned about the status of Hake, and then at the beginning of last year, we were really concerned about the status of Pollock, and then suddenly the quota was increased sixfold. And I feel like those wild fluctuations in our understanding of stock status is really detrimental to the fishery. So I think that, you know, whatever we can do to avoid that and have, you know, we've heard a lot about stability today, and that certainly that falls within the category of stability as well. Is it's both stability, but it's also transparency. I know that a lot of fishermen have looked at, you know, take that pollock change as an example. People have looked at that and said, well, you know, the science is just completely arbitrary. It doesn't make any sense. It's partly because it's not transparent and it's not well understood how you go from, you know, one side of the spectrum to the other. But I think if you can avoid that fluctuation, then you're doing everybody a favor.
Yeah, I'd just like to reiterate Aaron's point. I think the whole idea of mid-season adjustments is very risky in general to the full social welfare of the sector system. You know, with the pollock increase, I honestly believe that, you know, some scientists thought that they were doing sectors a favor by increasing it to 30 million pounds from 5 million pounds, and it had the complete opposite effect. You know, drop the pollock lease quota price from somewhere around 50 cents a pound down to almost zero, and it increased the Gulf of Maine cod lease quota price to an unsustainable rate, almost to $1.50 a pound in some senses. And the net result is we only caught 11 or 12 million pounds of the pollock anyway. So, you know, whatever, you know, mid-season adjustments that are made, I think, really have to be looked at very critically, and the same with the Georges Bank yellowtail adjustment. As far as risk, and you're talking, there's two levels of risk that go into this stock assessments. There's a scientific uncertainty, and then there's the management uncertainty. Well, I think, you know, scientific uncertainty is something that, you know, is a level that should be decided by population dynamic scientists. And the management uncertainty, though, I think can be reduced with much certainty, given the fact that we're fishing under hardtack, that we have a level of observer coverage that is unprecedented, that you know that there's no regulatory discards anymore. You have much more certainty in the management aspect of this. And so if you're looking to set a total allowable catch based on these two definitions of risk, I think there's one that you can control is certainly the management risk. That what I'd like to see is that risk be either eliminated or significantly reduced, and whatever fish that results as a remainder of eliminating this risk could be used for beneficial purposes. For example, a set aside for research, so fishermen who want to participate in collaborative research don't have to use their own ACE. So, you know, there's ways to be creative, but I think that's a critical component, is this amount of effort the fishermen have undertaken to reduce management uncertainty needs to be reflected in future stock assessments.
Okay, thanks. So we'll go with Dave Githel because he has the mic already, and then we'll leave it Mark because he had his hand up earlier.
Actually, my question is pretty similar to Dan's. Let's say that if you're predominantly a Gulf of Maine sector, or you're predominantly a Georges Bank sector, and all of a sudden you're told that Georges Bank cod, or Gulf of Maine cod, is being reduced by 50%. How is your sector going to deal with that situation?
As far as how you're going to deal it is versatility, and that's what we've done in the business right along in the days at sea. I mean, you changed. I mean, if you're a predominant Gulf of Maine cod fisherman, you know, you're going to have to go down and lease some Georgia's Bank cod and change your fishing habits. If they're not there, they're not there. How'd you survive until now?
Any other responses? Or okay, Libby, and then Willie, and then.
I think this goes somewhat hand-in-hand with the idea about what are the existing effort controls and what can we look at to reduce some of those existing effort controls and start to encourage people to look at the portfolio that the sector system provides them versus individual stocks. And I think it goes to the point that Mike was just talking about, is that if we create more flexibility within the sector system and the portfolio can address some of these stock concerns, then maybe people can start addressing, if it's Gulf of Maine cod, how they can strategize their businesses differently to deal with it. But I think it goes hand in hand with looking at some of the existing effort controls that have been hampering certain individuals from looking at the sector portfolio versus individual stocks within the sector system.
Yeah. Yes.
Actually, that's all you had to do in the Gulf of Maine when they fucking went to the catch limits.
The visioning is interesting because we just came out of the first year, and I think everyone's vision was just to kind of keep your head above the water and survive and, you know, make it through the first year. But one of the questions that I have with folks who kind of brought this game, I'll meet with Eric and some of the other sector managers, is when you're thinking of visioning, are you guys thinking of looking to the council and working with us on to how to, you know, looking for the council's vision? Are we talking about the council's vision of sectors, or are we talking about a sector's vision of what they're going to do? I see those as two different things. And kind of one of the things I'm wondering is, for the sector managers, or and the fishermen, do you feel like your sector has a vision? Other than just making it to next year, do you guys feel like you're being able to have the time to look forward, to think about innovating, to looking into the future, other than just getting by?
The vision was everybody to keep their head above, you know, but now we got to start thinking about, we adjust the business to stay in. You're saying, is it the council's vision or our vision? Well, guess what? Last year, you put it in our hands. Accountability come to us. So now I want to go in the future. I want to have control of my accountability. And I'm only working with the means that was put in front of me. And that's what I'm doing. I'm adjusting. So as far as the vision goes, it should be the vision of the sectors having input to the council members. Hopefully to change some of the regulations and take some of the measures that dinosaurs out of this.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's important to talk about both. I think that probably all sectors have a vision to some degree of where they want to be, and certainly problems that we have to address, like at sea monitoring costs, feeds into the vision. You know, we want to have a sector that's profitable for all of our members, and you know, depending on where you want to go with that, it can get more complex or more formal or whatever. But I think it's important for the management system, for the council and National Marine Fisheries Service, to have a vision as well. You know, like I said, I think that our track record in management for I don't know how long has been reactive. And is there an opportunity to get away from that? I think there might be. And we should take a look at this time right now to see if this is an opportunity to create a vision and to say that future management actions are going to work toward that vision and try and track our progress against some of the goals that we've set in each of the management actions, whether it's 16 or 13 or any of the frameworks, so forth. So anyway, I think there's room for both.
Thanks. All right, let's go to Jamal then.
Yeah, this is a question for Josh. I read this in your report, and I was curious when I read it, and I just heard you mention it again. Is how could you look at a mid-season adjustment of pollock as a negative? Change the species that had the potential to shut down every single sector out there into a target species mid-season. I mean, the landings ended up being twice what the original allocation was.
The mid-season adjustment of pollock wasn't a negative if it was done in a rational manner. The problem was that it was done in an irrational manner, where it was increased to 30 million pounds. So what really the net effect of the negative was that it reduced any value in the lease quota price for pollock, where we traded pollock quota at the beginning of the year for 50 or 60 cents per pound, and by the end of the year you couldn't give it away. And so what a more rational strategy would have been to realize that there's a lot of dark matter that went into that science and say, well, you know what, 30 million pounds, that doesn't seem very realistic when our previous stock assessment was 5 million pounds. What might this do to the quota price of this, and what might this do to the Gulf of Maine cod species, which would then be a choke stock for pollock? So I think a more rational decision would have been to say, well, we do realize that it needs to increase, but let's increase it to a level that at least is consistent with some historical catch of the fleet. So look at the 2009 to 2008 data and realize that the fleet only caught between 15 and 18 million pounds of pollock, and set the total allowable catch at that level rather than 30 million pounds. And then you would have at least maintained some value in the lease price for the pollock, and you wouldn't have run into the extreme choke situation for Gulf of Maine cod.
Well, I think that's a question that needs to be answered by a whole lot of people, and hopefully the scoping process with the different, you know, public meetings up and down the coast is going to open up some opportunities for that. You know, I think that we've got to take a look at some of the problems, and you know, I mentioned some numbers. There's major differences in the landings and the revenue, you know, trends between large boats and small boats, between boats landing in central ports, boats landing in outlying ports. And so I think you've got to start with the problems and then create a, you know, a wide variety of options and take a look at what's been done in other regions and see what is palatable for us here in New England, you know, what feels comfortable for New England fishermen. And I think that, you know, like I said earlier, there's been a lot of people that are saying we're really struggling right now, and then there's been a lot of other people saying, you know, don't tweak anything unless you're changing what I want you to change. So it's a difficult situation for managers, and I think hopefully we all recognize that. But, you know, you could take a look at, you know, different requirements for, you know, different categories of vessels, whether it's, I don't know if vessel size is the right split, or, you know, it might be something else entirely. So I guess I'm sort of passing the buck, but I think that this has got to be a wide open question for a lot of different people, and I'd just leave it at that for now.
Anyone else want to take a stab at that? Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, the sector system was built on historical harvesting, so they used a 10-year time span. So the small boats that we're talking about, they have their quota, and under the sector system, they're able to trade something that maybe they aren't capable because of the size of their vessel to harvest with some of the larger boats. You know, I really want to be up here talking about reallocating. We've been down this road so many times. You know, you can go back to days at sea and the way all that was done. You know, it really wasn't done in a fair manner. But I really don't want to go there. So I'm really, under the sector system, they have the opportunity to trade ace and buy ace the same way the larger boats, you know, have that opportunity. You know, and he mentioned these numbers that they had a 12% decrease in the value of their catch. That's because they're stuck inside. And they need to take the opportunity, if they have offshore quota, to go out there and harvest it. Because most of these big boats that have the increase in profitability are going offshore.
they haven't pigeonholed themselves inside, and they're always working the same areas. We're all over the place. You know, we could be up by Grand Banan one trip and southeast part the next. And, you know, I think it's important that we keep that in mind, that, you know, we got our quota based on what we historically caught, and it was a long time span. It wasn't a few years. It wasn't, you know, when days at leasing were in effect, except maybe for the last year. So these are the people that were catching the fish back then. And when we start talking about how we're going to give fish to the smaller boats to keep them profitable, all you're talking about is taking fish out of my hands and giving them to somebody else. I mean, it's a socialist concept.
One thing I'd like to add to that is, you know, I'm not looking to take quota from anybody else. I'm looking to keep the quota I was allocated. You know, I have 12 permits consolidated down to two boats. Who took the cut here? I know who took it. I took it. You know, and that's what I would like to stop. I mean, I'm not saying a small boats don't have a right to make a living. I'm no way, shape, or form doing that. But you know what? I'm not getting hurt for anybody else anymore in the business without speaking up.
Thanks. We can take one more question from the audience, if there's one out there. No? Ellen?
I've been listening to this tonight. I've heard only the small boat sectors mention fleet diversity and the importance of it, and the importance of maintaining a small boat fleet and a large boat fleet. I've also just heard two gentlemen say that the day boat fleet should go offshore. The boats are built for inshore. They can't go fish on George's Bank. It's physically impossible to hold enough fuel and enough ice or enough fish for them to take trips. So that's not a possibility. I understand that. I hope you do too. My question for the larger boat sectors is, do you feel that there's an importance in keeping fleet diversity? And if so, how?
I think it's important, but I don't know the numbers, but I'm willing to bet that there is a lot more inshore boats than there are offshore boats. And so how big do you want the small boat fleet to be? And we're spending most of our time offshore. We don't have large inshore quotas. So the message I'm getting is that you want us to stay offshore all the time, no matter what the weather, and give up every opportunity that we might have inshore. And so I don't have the answer, but, I mean, we used a long frame of history. And so these people that aren't able to make a living inshore all the time, I mean, I don't know what the problem is. They should have a decent quota if they were in the fishery for a period of time.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not telling anybody go get hurt. You know, I was on small boats for a lot of years. He's talking to the wrong guy about going offshore. I was on George's in a 50-foot boat. So I've had small boats, ran it 5 days of fuel tops. You had to be in on the fifth morning. If you weren't, you're getting towed home. I mean, I've done it. So it's not, I've owned 46-foot boats. I've owned 45-foot boats. You know, it wasn't me that created the problem of why that didn't make it. It wasn't me. It wasn't the allocation that was given to me. I changed with the businesses. You know, you had inshore closures, you had night closures, stayed and put in that weren't right. You had lobstermen taking grounds away from fishermen. You know, there's a lot of reasons why. Without that Gulf of Maine cod being on Middle Bank the last few years and up in the bay, which I was one of the guys that used to go up in the bay and harvest codfish all spring. I was up there on a 50-foot or a 70-foot boat or 80-foot boat, whatever boat I was on at the time. I was up in the bay harvesting it. I mean, I didn't create those problems. What I'm not saying go offshore and get hurt. I'm not saying any of that. That's a choice. If it's to take your small quota that you have and try to get some more, I mean, I can't help you with the banking and the finance part of it. Nobody helped me. To get the small quota and put it on into a bigger boat, if that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do in the business. We didn't create the problems. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, go through the future. And I'm not saying anybody go offshore. I'm the last guy that wants anybody to go out of business, and I'm the last guy that wants anybody to get hurt. So if I'm putting that out, that's not what I mean. What I mean is I can't take no more. I mean, I've been pushed. I've invested. You know, I didn't go to Disney World. You know, I was on judges. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm protecting what I have. I wasn't suggesting anybody get hurt or safety or anything.
I want to bring this back to more of a vision for the sector system rather than, I think there's going to be a lot of discussions about fleet diversity coming up as we go down the road with Amendment 18. And we've got about 5 minutes left, so I think what I'd like to do to bring it back to sector vision, even though I said I wasn't going to go down the line and call on everyone, is maybe if all the panelists could answer the question or could finish the sentence, you know, in 10 years, in 5 years or 10 years, sectors should be blank. And you've got about 30 seconds each, so maybe just a few words or final thoughts on this. We can start with Linda if you want to.
Well, in 10 years, I think that the council, the agency, and the industry should be working side by side and listening to everybody, because your fishermen are your best conservationists. And I think they have a lot of valid input, and I think they should be heard. And I understand their frustrations. I mean, they'll be doing something, and in mid-season they have to change it, and they adapt. Believe me, they have adapted to more things. You guys say jump through this fire, and they do that because this is their livelihood. This is it. They have mortgages. They have kids in college. This is it. This is their retirement. I think my best thing would be that if we can get the sectors, and it's true, the sector members, they do work together. They help each other out. And I think that we could do the same with the industry, I mean, with the agency and with the council. We could all help each other out and make it a great and prosper business for everybody involved.
Well, in 10 years, I'd like to see the sectors be self-sufficient. And I think we can do that by figuring out a long-term solution for monitoring cost, by opening up some of the closed areas to improve optimum yield, and increasing the rollover percentage so that, again, improve optimum yield. That's it.
I've been saying it right. The whole meeting here is, you know, it's a business. I'd like to stay in business. I'd like to be, you know, be able to build a new boat someday. You know, the boats are getting older. I mean, it's the only business I know that you got restraints on. I'd like to see some of the restraints taken away, especially the closed areas. I think we got some habitat clauses to work out. Other than that, I don't think anything should be closed to us. We're in the hard-tack fisheries. My vision would be, you know, self-sustainable, profitable business in 10 years.
I'd say sectors have to continue to help us stay within catch limits and, you know, keep the discards down and be financially profitable for a whole range of fishermen, whether you're a large boat fleet owner or a small boat owner on board, owner operator, fisherman, part-time, full-time, whatever gear type you use. And I think financially profitable and affordable is the key for those diverse fishermen.
In 5 years, you know, I think I agree with these guys. Sectors should be an efficient, profitable business that works under a system that's not redundant, that doesn't require fishermen to submit up to 6 different reports for every trip they sail, and that doesn't require managers to receive, repackage, and resubmit information, data, to the National Marine Fisheries Service. Sectors and their fishermen should be able to use current information, whether it's fishing effort information or current up-to-date stock information, to make real-time business decisions. And sectors should allow these fishermen, they should afford them additional opportunities to harvest the allowable limits of fish.
Building off of what Eric said, I think that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, self-sufficient, profitable, streamlined, I think this is going more to the management side of things, and I think everyone here will get a little bit more taste of what it takes to run a sector. I would say 2 years from now, I would like to have the bulk of the data redundancies gone, because it is going to prohibit or hinder a sector from being more cost-effective in the long term. But self-sufficient, profitable, utilizing all of the resources that are available to them, fishing up to OI, not just being self-sufficient businesses.
I think the sector management system should offer a fertile regulatory environment for fishermen to be able to have healthy, sustainable livelihoods, be able to make their livelihoods on the water, and hopefully within 10 years to have our stocks rebuilt to the point that a fisherman could give or pass on a permit or access to a fishery instead of passing on debt or the lesson that you shouldn't follow my footsteps.
My turn. Okay. So I would like to see greater than 50% of New Hampshire caught fish stay in New Hampshire. In restaurants, markets, schools, hospitals, I'd like to see the fish branded to the vessel. And fishermen get fixed prices or futures contracts for their fish. I'd like to see opportunities for new entrants into my fisheries. I'd like to see electronic dealer data reporting and no paper VTR. In fact, no VTR at all. I'd like to see a significant amount of the research money dedicated towards a robust, useful, collaborative research program that utilizes the unbelievable ecological knowledge that fishermen have about the resource and use it for stock assessments, gear technologies, and other types of very innovative strategies to promote a healthy ecosystem and a sustainable fishery.
I certainly don't need as much as Josh. But a simpler fishery, you know, from an operator standpoint would be nice. A sustainable fishery and a fishery that we can give to the next generation. That would all be good. I'd be happy with that.
I agree. My concern is being able to pass down an industry from generation to generation, continue the heritage we have. That's a big concern of mine. And in the future, I think we keep going around this. I would like to see less government in our fishing operations. This is supposed to be more efficiency on our part and less on the government, and I would like to see that happen. Thanks.
Great. Thanks so much. We're just a few minutes over, so we're going to break here. And I want to thank all the panelists. I think that was a really good discussion. We're going to take a break until 3:15, which is 13 minutes from now, and come back for monitoring.
Yeah.
Can we have the rest of the monitoring panel members come up too, please? Can we have Mike Walsh, Josh Wiersma?